John Imers is the Dominion Chairman of the Monarchist League of Canada, and he joins me on the line from Ireland this morning. Please welcome to the commentary.ca, John Imers. Good morning, Mr. Imers.
Thank you. Good morning.
You're in Ireland this morning?
I'm just on Ireland on a short holiday. I was born in Dublin, which is perhaps a funny location for a monarchist, but I had parents who were living here at the time, and I've never been back, so on a short holiday.
So it's not the morning there, is it?
No, it's the afternoon.
Really? All right. I want to begin with what's the feeling that you get on that side of the world about the Charles and Camilla wedding?
Oh, listen, people are well aware that one out of two marriages in Britain and Ireland, that's in Canada, end in divorce. And when that happens, it's not a happy situation. And at the same time, we all know in all those countries how many of our friends and family members have found happiness in a second marriage. So there's a great acceptance that we would wish our future king to find the same happiness as the second marriage that so many of us have found in our lives, and it would be hypocritical to wish otherwise.
Now, this Populist poll from Britain says that 32% of the polled support the marriage, 29 are opposed, and surprisingly enough, 38 don't care. Have we evolved as a society, I guess?
Absolutely. Listen, the don't care number is a perfectly good number, too, because I think an increasing number of people feel that the relentless intrusion into the private lives of members of the royal family who, seek nothing for themselves, whether you're a monarchist or a republican, you can appreciate the fact that members of the royal family are born into a life of service. And they don't choose it, nor do they generally court publicity as perhaps a Hollywood star would or some other media personality. And their private lives should be much more their own business. The ability to have a zone of privacy in today's world is a precious thing. And I think that 38% are people who would reflect that you judge people by the way they serve others and by the way they carry out their public duties, not whom they choose to marry or whom they choose to divorce. And to me, that's a very realistic attitude in the 21st century.
Is this wedding as hastily... was this wedding hastily prepared?
I couldn't hear you, sorry?
Was the wedding hastily prepared?
Well, I don't think that's a fair criticism, which has been uttered in some quarters, because you have to remember that, again, because of a media leak, it was announced 4 or 5 days before the original projection, and I'm sure by that time all the I's would have been dotted and the T's crossed. But when somebody sold the secret to a British news outlet, the palace thought it better to announce it themselves rather than let it be leaked that way. So, yes, there were some details that were incomplete at that moment, and that's probably not a happy situation for anybody. I think any of our listeners and readers would understand that if details of a family event are leaked when they're incomplete, there are going to be changes. Caterers change, venues change, preferences change, budgets change. That's a very human thing. So to again make a meal out of the fact that the wedding was going to be held at the Guildhall, the actual civil ceremony, rather than inside the precincts of Windsor Castle. That's an interesting detail, but it doesn't affect the central fact, which is that two people who love each other and wish to support each other for the rest of their lives are getting married. That's what's important. The details are a matter of choice. It's the same thing whether you're going to serve, salmon or beef at a reception. Well, who cares? It's a detail. The fact is that Charles has found a woman who's conducted herself faultlessly in public over the last very difficult period, who has never sought publicity or the limelight for herself, and whose sole agenda seems to be very clearly supporting the Prince of Wales in his work and all that he does. And that's probably the important thing. Camilla Parker Bowles is a human being and a mortal and an imperfect human being, as all of us are, whatever her faults, seems clearly to have no agenda of her own, wants to be a supportive, loving wife, and who could criticize her for that?
Is Mrs. Parker Bowles' unpopularity, has that declined in recent years?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Is Mrs. Parker Bowles' unpopularity? Has that declined in recent years?
Oh, yes. I mean, listen, at the time when Diana so tragically died, of course, a time of finger-pointing and of a lot of moral hypocrisy and hysteria, fingers were being pointed and popularity is measured in polls, which only are a snapshot of public opinion at an instant and not a reflected thought, naturally was very low. The fact that her popularity has risen so much in recent years reflects inevitably the passage of time and also, as I was saying, her willingness to be a very much a quiet, non-public figure who appears supportively by the side of her first her friend and companion and now her fiancé, and that's what people like. I think she occupies a very traditional position, which is a very comfortable one for her and the Prince of Wales, and that accounts for that reticence and that reluctance to speak out on her own, and the fact that she's clearly in consultation with Charles determined that she should not ever be queen, but she will occupy a position of dignity and of support and of importance in the Commonwealth, but not be queen, reflects a deliberate, low-key approach that sits very easily with people and makes people respect her and respect the situation in which these two now find themselves and the new life on which they're embarking.
Is it hypocritical, though, that a future king, a future head of the Church of England, would have a civil wedding?
I think people who are British and Anglican may have something to say about that. That's a tiny minority even of Britons, and of course in Canada we don't have an established church, so how they choose to be married or what Charles's religious role is none of anyone's business at all. It would only affect those people who are communicant members of the Church of England, who are about a million people in Britain, who are, I suppose, entitled to have views. But, you know, when it comes to religion, that's a divisive thing. I'm not saying religion is bad. I'm just saying people all have their religious convictions and preferences, and I don't think we can judge people on the basis of it any more than you would judge me or were you a Buddhist, a Hindu, a Catholic, a Jew, or anything else. We all have our convictions. We respect each other's convictions, but we judge people by the totality of their service to others, not their religion, not their color of skin, not the language they speak.
Mrs. Parker Bowles getting the being styled Her Royal Highness, is that because she's British and Mrs. Simpson was not?
Yes, it's a great honor that the Queen only gives to the inner circle of the royal family, and it was thought right that the wife-to-be of the heir to the throne should be a Royal Highness. That would be a style, a title that would go with marrying the Prince of Wales. So it's another signal by the Queen. A great deal of nonsense has been written and talked about how the Queen disapproves of this marriage. Well, A, no one that I know, anyway, certainly no one in the media, is privy to the Queen's most intimate thoughts. I doubt anyone other than the Duke of Edinburgh is. And secondly, all the signals the Queen is sending, this title, giving a reception for 700 people in her most favorite home at Windsor Castle, having a British post issue a stamp, for two stamps for the royal wedding, these are all signs of royal favor, not of royal displeasure, so they are, I think, very good signals that the Queen regards this wedding, whatever her personal thoughts are, with equanimity, and is happy that her son will have someone by his side to face the increasingly heavy burdens that will be on him as, A, the Queen ages, and B, in the fullness of time as he comes to the throne.
Well, was this wedding, though, was this planned to deal with any of the... Is it happening now because of any of the criticism that was happening about the civil list and Charles's expenditures?
No, the Charles's expenditures are not actually from the civil list. They're from the Duchy of Cornwall, the income of which entirely goes to the Prince of Wales. It's not subject to parliamentary scrutiny, although he has opened up his account books absolutely fully in recent years in response to demand for transparency. And, of course, the minute you do that, you get the media starting to feel free to criticize, and members of the public speak in high dudgeon about and this, that, and everything. I think it was much more a natural evolution. We have Harry, who is about to enter Sandhurst, so the younger of Charles's two sons, now embarking on his role in life. William setting off on an independent existence. The boys have just appointed their own private secretary, that is a person who will be their chief of staff, so to speak, for the first time. And it becomes apparent to me that with his family responsibilities of a his closest family responsibilities of the boys when they were bereaved and young, now moving to a new stage of independence and maturity, Charles felt it was time that he could get on to resolve his own personal happiness. He put the happiness and well-being of his boys first, and I think that's something we can commend him for. Enough time has now passed since their mother's death, and they have grown up, and he's now able to get on with his own personal agenda, and I think that the timing seems logical to me and unexceptional.
For us Canadians, are there any ramifications to, coming out of this wedding, whatever Mrs. Parker Bowles will be styled, etc., like that?
Sure. Well, I think for Canadians, most Canadians are happy that their future king, or the Charles as a human being, who's much in the news, would be a happy person, and eventually a happier king, having, to use his great-great-uncle's phrase, the woman he loves by his side. Other than that, there are no constitutional or political ramifications. I think Canadians will hope to see Charles and Camilla over here, get to know Camilla for herself rather than through the distortion of sensationalized coverage that often, as I say, originates from the British tabloids via the American networks, and look forward to getting to know this man's restless, capable intelligence that's made such a difference in the lives of inner-city youth through the Prince's Trust, his provocative views on modern architecture and complementary medicine and holistic and modern versions of agriculture, which you don't have to agree with any more than you have to agree with what your mother or father or sibling's views are around the dinner table, but you can respect them, and you can see here's a man with a brain and a restless, probing intelligence, and not just some automaton who's going to wear a crown on his head and cut a good figure on coins. So in that sense, it's good for us all if that individual is happy and has got on with his personal life, thus freer to serve not only the Canadian public, but the eyes of the Commonwealth that will be on him increasingly in the years to come.
You alluded to the Duke of Windsor, or Edward VIII. Times have changed since he had to abdicate.
Indeed they have. And Edward had to give up his throne, not only because he wanted to marry an American divorcee, which by the morals of the 30s was inconceivable, but primarily because his government, his ministers, who are constitutionally responsible for the throne and the king, advised him formally that he could not do this. He was not able to take his minister's advice, and so it was a question of them resigning and having an election fought on the issue, which Edward, for all his faults, was wise enough to see would be a wrenching and divisive thing, and he instead abdicated himself. He did his duty. He choosing between his personal pleasure and his duty to what was then the empire, he abdicated. I'm not sure it was a happy decision for him in the long run. And of course, in the 50s, we had Princess Margaret, much faced in the same situation. She wanted to marry a divorced man who had been an equerry at court and was a commoner, and public opinion wouldn't have tolerated that, and it was Margaret in her famous renunciation statement when she turned 25, said she was mindful of the church's teaching, as it then was, that marriage was indissoluble, and she put what she perceived to be her duty and the well-being of the throne that her sister occupied ahead of her personal happiness. I think most people would reflect, looking at the unhappy lives of the Duke of Windsor and Margaret, that they're happy that both the church's teaching to some extent, but more importantly public opinion, have moved on to allow for some possibility of happiness. There's no guarantee in this world that anyone's going to be happy, but I think it would be very hypocritical in a society where, as I say, people enjoy second chances all the time in marriage, to deny that to a member of the royal family, especially the heir. And we also, I think, have moved from seeing members of the royal family as icons of perfection to people who are much like us, who serve in a thankless position and try to do their best for society, and like all of us, don't always succeed.
John, it's been fascinating to talk to you this morning.
Well, it's really good talking to you, very best wishes to everybody back home.
And I wanted to ask you about the Governor General, but I'll perhaps let you get back to your holiday, and we'll have you on again real soon.
Well, I'll look forward to that, and anyone who wants information, it's at www.monarchist.ca.
www.monarchist.ca. John Imers is the Dominion Chairman of the Monarchist League. I'm Joseph Flanagan.